Greetings, brethren. This is our first Sabbath together after the Feast of Tabernacles. We did not have Sabbath services immediately after the Feast of Tabernacles because that ended on Thursday, and then there was one day travel time and then Sabbath, so we just took that day for an extra day of rest, and I'm sure that all of us needed it. Let me just mention something before I get into how the feast went. We had great feast wherever it was, but my mind has been on something that I preached on during the Feast of Tabernacles, which is the 70-week prophecy. Understanding the 70-week prophecy. And I got to thinking, in understanding about the 70-week prophecy and when it began, when it ended, when Jesus' ministry began, when Jesus was born, when he was crucified, going clear back to when God made the covenant with Abraham, brought the children of Israel out of Egypt, gave them the law at Mount Sinai. All of those things have to do with the appointed times. So my thought at the present time is to take the book on the what we have on the 70 weeks prophecy and expand it with a title something like this: God's Appointed Times and the Messiah. And then have the birth of Jesus, 70-week prophecy understood, take it right in chronology, okay? The crucifixion and resurrection of Christ, and take the things out of some of our other publications and put them all together and emphasize the appointed times as a very important thing in the way that God fulfills what he does. And especially understanding that, yes, Jesus did begin his ministry, and you'll get a sermon on that, on the 70 weeks prophecy understood. He did begin his ministry on the Day of Atonement, which was an appointed time. See, because Genesis 1:14 says that that the sun, the moon, the stars were given for appointed times. Okay? Then we read in Leviticus 23 that these are the appointed feasts of the Lord. And through these, God reveals his plan. And then we have the appointed time for Jesus to be born, Galatians 4. The appointed time for Jesus to die, Romans 5. So if we can put this all together, the appointed times of the Messiah, Jesus the Christ, then a subtitle having to do with his birth, his ministry, his death and resurrection. All of those at the appointed times. And this will give us, I think, much more credibility with the whole thing. And so that's my thought for it at the present time. So that's where I'm headed toward it, rather than make it a separate book. Now, I hope you all had a good feast. I did a lot of traveling during the feast and before. I left to go to Cincinnati for the Day of Atonement. And that turned out really good, because the way I get to Cincinnati is that I drive up to San Francisco and fly nonstop, which got me in there just before the Day of Atonement. And we had Day of Atonement there in Cincinnati, and also had a baptism there. We had 85 attend, and then left the next morning to go to South Bend, and I stayed at South Bend and then drove up to Ron and Aaron Carey, the ones who handled the cbcg.org website. And we were working on things, how to improve it. So the way we're going to improve it is have things right up front that are more relevant. Prophecy for today, Not only that, latest sermon, then we can have faith and hope and love and have all of those categorized right up front, and then extended series, Hebrews, Romans, and Galatians, plus the other ones, have those all right up front, rather than have an index alphabetically listed of what we have in the sermons, because I don't know about you, but me, when I see an alphabetical index, you know, it's like you go into the library and you're looking for a book, and the librarian sends you to the, this is before computers, you know, sends you to the card catalog and all the little drawers, you know, and you start looking alphabetically. And then you come to the librarian and say, this is taking too long. You got something easier? Oh, yes, you go over to the other card catalog, and it's listed by category. So this is what we're going to do on the website. Then we're also going to combine all of our statistics from cbcg.org and our Spanish website that we have, which is, what is that? Ecclesia Christiani Biblio Didios. Now, that's the best I can do in Spanish. Okay? And Miguel Mercia is running that. Plus, we have another gentleman. His first name is Gil, and he's been doing some translating for us on things that we need to add to the website. Because what we want to do is have the Spanish language website as much like the English website as we can. And so that's going very well. He's done some very good translating. The last one he did is You're Complete in Jesus Christ. So we're happy with that. Then we're going to take the statistics from the videos that we now have online on cbcg.org, and also the statistics from Church at Home, combine all of those together in one report on our activity for all of our websites and things that we have. And that will put us right at about 50,000 individual visitors per month. Now, also, had one baptism in Cincinnati, then I had two baptisms in Tucson. Did I have another baptism? I think I had four. Anyway, I had four baptisms. Yeah, four. Then we had down there in Hollister. So, yeah, I did have four. Then got reports that Roger had two baptisms. And I think that Glenn Daniel had two baptisms. So the whole total altogether came out to be about 10 baptisms, which for us is a big step forward. And that is evidenced also in the things that we are doing, like with the coming book, Lord, What Should I Do? We haven't settled on what the cover will be, but we're pretty well done with that book. So we're going to get that out as soon as we can. Now, after spending 3 days with Ron and Aaron Carey, then opening night, we had Wednesday night at Shipshawana, and we were in a convention hall that a bigger group came in and bumped us out of our regular room, and so they put us in this little teeny-weeny box of a room, all the chairs together, no tables and everything like that. So Gene Palm, who our elder and host for Shipshawana, and that's in the Amish country. And so anyway, what we did, there was another part of their whole convention thing, which was clear on the backside of a museum. So we had a large area where they set us up with tables, put a curtain all the way the length of the building so that the museum wouldn't bother us. But the museum was really interesting because it was all Hudson cars going all the way back. And that was really interesting. They set us up really nice, and we had 85 there, really good turnout. And one thing that we wanted to do, which we'll try and get out to everyone, is to sing the song, The Lord God Almighty, which we did down in Gilroy to finish off the feast with all of the graphics that Randy did with it, and it really turned out great. There are a few things that we need to do to improve it to get it out, but we'll try and get it out to everyone because you'll enjoy it. And then, for the Holy Day, we had to start services at 9:30 because I had to catch a 3:30 plane in order to get out of there to get down to Pensacola so I could be for Navarro Beach the next day. So had to get out of there at 1:30, so we started services at 9:30, took a break, had services again, and then I had the car right out the backside, and I left, and everyone stayed for a meal. And I got up there, got on the plane, and the plane route had to take me this way. South Bend, Detroit, Atlanta, Pensacola. So I left at 3:30 and arrived in Pensacola at 10 o'clock in the evening, at night. And so Glenn Daniel picked me up. That was about a 40-minute drive to where we're going, got into the motel, got to bed at midnight, got up at 8 o'clock. We had services at 10 o'clock, and that turned out really good because the hall was just around the corner from the hotel, so that worked out good. We had 65 people there, so everywhere we went, we had really a good increase in attendance everywhere. And then I had to leave there at 3:30 in the afternoon so I could go to Pensacola and catch a plane to go to Dallas and from Dallas to Waco. And everything was on time. All the planes were on time. Isn't that amazing? Yes. None of them late. None of them canceled like last year. And got to Waco, and there we had 105 people. A lot of new people for the first time, and a lot of them from other churches of God. And the main comment that we had from people with other churches of God is, we never get sermons like this when we go to the feast. So Kimberly has said all during the feast and after the feast, hello, you know, is this CBCG? Yes. Could you add me to your mailing list? So we've had so many people added to the mailing list that we're bumping up the CD orders that we have by 50. So that has worked out really good. Then, after Waco, then really came the hardest part. If you think the other part was hard, this is the hardest. I had to get up at 4:45 in Waco so I could catch a plane, yes, quarter to five, so I could catch a plane leaving at 7:15, which would take me to Dallas then, which changed planes, which would take me directly to Tucson. So that worked out fine. Dwayne Tibbins was there, and he took me up to the airport, got on just fine, everything worked fine. But I tell you, they had the crummiest planes from Dallas to Waco and Waco to back. And they were so bad that I commented to the stewardess. I said, because there are these prop planes and you load in the back, you know, and had these huge propellers on it, overhead wings. And said, well, these were made in 1996. And I thought, So my comment was, why don't you sell these back to the Russians? They really need them. Because they were so bad. You had seats that didn't lean back, and the plane rattled and everything like that. So anyway, plane going to Tucson was on time, got in there right on time, and Leon Ritchie met me, and we went on down to where we had services in Tucson, and that was all in a hotel. Everybody in a hotel. We had 45 there, which was a really good turnout for Tucson, and it was really a lovely setting. And I got a little carried away in preaching, so I actually preached there 5 hours, yeah, all together. And with a meal in between, not counting the 5 hours. So we were there a good time, you know. And after that, I had 2 baptisms there, then had something for dinner, and then went to bed at 8 o'clock and got up at 3:45 so I could catch a plane to go to Las Vegas and then to San Jose. So that worked out fine. Got off the plane, and since they're remodeling the San Jose airport, you got your luggage at a different place. So I didn't know that. So I started out and walked way down this corridor, and I get there, and it says, Southwest baggage, U-turn arrow, up in Terminal B. So I turn around and go on up there, and I'll have to tell a good one on myself because this was really kind of silly. But anyway, got my luggage, and then I had to walk down to Terminal A to get my car. And I got there, and where I normally park it, it wasn't there. And I thought, what on earth happened? And I have to get to Gilroy for services. So I said, I checked with the parking people, and they said, well, here's the number to call, and you have to do this. So I figured, well, I'll have to take care of it afterwards, because it was either parked too long and they impounded it, or they said the license wasn't renewed, but it really was, or whatever, or it was stolen. So what I did, I went down and got one of these, got a cab, and it was, you know, one of these vans. And fellow who was driving it was from Ethiopia. And he was a good driver, but he didn't know where to go. So I said, you know, just go. I'll tell you where to go. So got down to the Hilton Garden Inn in Gilroy, and everything was fine there, and started the services. And then during the break, I was talking with Dolores, and I said, you know, I really don't know what happened to my car. It was either impounded or stolen or something. And she said, didn't you leave from San Francisco? Oh, yes, I did leave from San Francisco. So the next day, Jonathan took me up there, and we got in where I parked. Voila, there's my car. But the reason I forgot all about the difference between San Francisco and San Jose was because it took me about 3 days to get my tickets, and I had to piecemeal each, and I had 4 different tickets in order to get my trip going. Came back, we had a great feast there in Gilroy. So next year, everybody come to Gilroy. Worked out really fine. Wonderful meeting hall. And had a baptism there as well. And the meals we had there were really good. Enjoyed it. And it was a nice, close, wonderful feast. Good comments. So that's my story of the feast. Now, from the reports that we have from Wells Beach, Maine, full house, 55 to 57. Everything went really well. Marlon Fannin was our elder. And Chuck and Di Smith were the ones who were our host. However, please pray for Diane Smith, because after the feast, she was diagnosed with a mass on her brain, and she's in a hospital in Boston. And Roger Kendall and Duncan McLeod went down to anoint her today, on the Sabbath day today. So that was kind of not good news at the end of the feast. Then the surprising feast site turned out to be Orlando, Florida. Now, that came about because Joseph Nolan, when I went back to the days of Unleavened Bread to Atlanta, he and his wife lived down in that area, and they lived further south in Florida, and they had to move up there because of his work. And so they came and said, well, what about having a Feast of Tabernacles in Orlando? I said, well, go see what you can find out. So he got the embassy suites and the meeting hall, but the rooms he negotiated for $79. And that included the breakfast that you had every day, and that included the snacks and the happy hour every day. Plus, they had at the Holy Land Museum. They had a Creation Museum. They have a lot of things down there. And so we started out with that one because others came from other churches of God. And we started out with that one. I think it was 69 or 70, and we only were anticipating about 35. After that, it dropped down a bit, but also as a result of it, we're going to have a fellowship group in Ocala, Florida, so that should work out really good. Then come over to Houston, Texas, and Frank Penny and that independent church have affiliated with us now for 12 or 13 years, and they have the feast there every year. And they had a good turnout. I think they had 40 people, 45 people there. And then up in Kimberling City, first time we had it up there, Missouri, which is near Branson, Wendell Urey was able to rent a church that had cushion seats and the whole thing. So they had a really good location, really good feast there. And they ended up with 45 people, and we didn't expect any more than about 20. So that worked out really, really good. Then in Tucson, we had a good feast. We have 45 people there. And again, we were able to rent the Independent Church of God building, so we're able to have the meetings and meals right there in the building, and that also worked out good. And Lawrence Birchfield said that the feast turned out to be really great there. Then we had Bozeman, Montana, where last year we had, 95?
Yeah.
Yeah, for the high. Well, this year we had 75 because the feast site in Canada, we didn't have one in Western Canada, and we had one in Summerland, British Columbia. And so the attendance was a little low there, but in Summerland they had, I think, 65 or 75 people up there. And Norbert Bonert, our elder and host, said everything really went well. And he said, please come next year. So I said, okay, I'll see what I can do. But I'll have to find out what the airplane connections are. And Roger informed me that I need to have my horse riding skills up to snuff to go there. So I have to get that taken care of. Then we come down to Palm Springs. We had 30 there, which was more than we expected, and that turned out really, really good. So everywhere we had good reports, good attendance, and everyone was really happy with all of the sermons prepared ahead of time for the feast, and had several comments that people said, that especially some of the new people that had attended from other churches, they said, we have never been told what we are going to do while as we are kings and priests during the millennium. So several suggested we take the videos and the transcripts, which we already have ready, and work that up into a little package of 3 DVDs and the transcripts, and have that available, and sort of entitle it, What Will I Do During the Millennium? Put it all together that way. So that's also a possibility. So we're back in the saddle, ready to go, and happy we're all here for the Sabbath. And if this keeps up, and more people start coming, which they will, just be sure and pray about it, God will add it, you see. The thing that is important to always remember is this. You do not focus on the numbers. Everyone needs to focus on their relationship with God the Father and Jesus Christ. Christ, who is the head of the church, will take care of all of the rest. And he knew that there would be times when there would be very few people, so he said, where two or three are gathered in my name, there I am in your midst. In addition, when you consider that we sent out for various small groups over 250 sets of the DVDs, and if you consider that the average group would be about five, that gives us about another 750 or more. And then when you consider, in addition to that, we send out for everyone all the feast days on a CD, that meant that everyone was able to keep the feast and listen to the same sermons and be able to know and understand that particular meaning of the feast. So overall, this was really a great feast for us. However, we need not get caught up in numbers. Numbers, unless there's conversion and Christ, really are meaningless. And we have seen that in our experience too, haven't we? As well, yes. So we'll trust God, look to God in all things that we do, keep doing what we need to do, ask God to lead us and inspire us so we understand what we need to do, how we need to do it, the way we need to do it. And to do it in such a way, especially is with the economics coming up, which I'll cover here in just a little bit, that we need to make maximum use of the money that we have right now to get the things that we need, such as books, before the price of everything just goes skyrocketing out of sight. Because the price of books could easily double in just a few months. See, right now, we're able to get the leather Bible, which, by the way, we write, I think it is probably the middle of December, we will have the 6,000 paperback second edition Bibles shipped from China. When we had the second edition leather done, we still had sufficient quantity of the paperback, so we didn't have them printed at that time. So when we got the quote for 5,000 of the paperbacks, and he also sent the quote for 6,000 paperbacks. And because when you order paper, you have to order in whole rolls. You can't get part of this and part of that and part of the other thing. So the bid came out for $5,000, $68,000, and the bid for $6,000 was $70,000. And that's because of the paper. So we said, give us $3,000 and triple the price. No. No, we said, hey, we'll take 6,000 of them. Okay? So that will be coming sometime the middle of December, rather. Now, we keep tabs on the inventory of books that we have and the occult holidays or God's holy days, which on Friday we had 638 left. So we're going to have to order those. What we're going to do is take the section that we have there on the occult and entertainment and movies where we list all the movies. What we are going to do is we're going to add some of the movies in 2009, 2010 to it, but put it in such a way that we don't have to change the number of pages. We may drop off some of the earlier ones that we have, the earlier years, and first we're going to try dropping the type size down from 12 to 11, see if we can get it all in that space and see how it comes with that. So we'll be ordering that right away. Then, Lord, what should I do? We still haven't gotten the the final thing that we need for the cover. And we've decided to do this. Appendix A, after it's all done, and the final chapter is, Lord, now what should I do? Then the first appendix is how to study the Bible, the 14 rules of Bible study. Then we're going to have a section, keys to answered prayer. And what is that basic thing? Study and prayer, right? Then we're going to have the appendix, who and what is a true Christian? And we're just about ready to get that going. The one on the 70 weeks prophecy and the appointed times, that'll have to wait until probably sometime at the end of the year, first the next year, because they take off a full 2 weeks for Christmas, you know, and so forth. So that brings us all up to date on what we're doing, how we're doing it. Oh, by the way, I need to mention that back in Philadelphia, there is a church that was a black, gospel church. And Lewis Williams, many of you know or heard of Lewis Williams through the years, he lives back in Washington, D.C., and he's been in contact with this pastor. And he told me what happened with this pastor. He was leaping over the pulpit in one of their very enthusiastic sessions. And right while he was leaping over the pulpit, it came into his mind, keep the commandments of God. Now, can God call anyone or reveal something to him at any time? Yes, that's as close to hanging upside down in a well as you can get. Yeah. So, before the feast, we sent them Bibles and all of our books and all of our literature and said, okay, if you really mean it, here you go. So I haven't heard back from them yet. But remember, I mentioned one time, what would happen if a minister stood in the pulpit, which he did the very next Sabbath, and he said, brethren, we are going to keep the Sabbath, so next week we're going to meet here on Saturday. Half the church went with him. Someone said, he lost half the church. And someone else replied, no, he gained half the church. Then we're going to have to work up some things for church at home. What do you do at church at home? And, you know, things like this. So, but that church at home is going very well. We've got the Halloween things already online. And Monday we're going to do one or two on Thanksgiving and go back and show the origin of it and show that Thanksgiving for America is much like what Purim was for the Jews in the book of Esther. So it's perfectly something that we should do in honoring and thanking God as a nation. And so I'm going to cover some of those things. All right, well, let's take a break.